All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. We will do 1 or 2 hours. It depends on your questions. Calls are starting to come in, but there's still plenty of room. So jump in, press 1 on your phone, get the questions lined up. If we get enough, we'll go on to 2 hours. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. We've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, emissions, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. Bruce, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. So let's bring in John and Ethan, and we'll see what you guys have to talk about this week. John, Ethan, welcome.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be here.
As always, good to be here, Kevin.
Well, it looks like we've got the regular crew back.
We do.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, it was a crazy.
You there?
Kevin? Hello?
Hello?
John, can you hear me?
I hear you, Bruce, and
I can hear you too, Bruce.
Ethan does too. We're all on here. I don't know if we're on air or not, if anyone's listening. Anyone who has my cell number, text me and let me know you could hear me. I don't know what we could do without Kevin, but
this is what I did last week.
We could improvise. No one's texted me yet. We're all connected to something.
Yeah. Wow, that didn't last long.
No. Should we try calling him back? Should we log off and call back?
You can try. Might as well.
I'm going to try that, Bruce. If anyone's listening, we're going to sign off briefly and call Kevin back and see what happens.
Should I hang up and call the number?
Yeah, do the same thing, Bruce.
All right, hold on. Just come back, guys.
Oh, he's back. There he is. Oh, whoa.
I'm back. That was a problem on my end. So we're going to restart this. So hold on, everyone. Keep pressing 1 if you want to join us. I figured out the problem. We're just going to restart. We're in fine shape here.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got the guys with me from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce and John and Ethan. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, emissions, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. We're going to get to those calls in just a minute. Bruce, welcome back.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always our pleasure.
John and Ethan, welcome back, guys. It looks like we've got the regular crew back. It was a crazy couple of weeks.
Yeah, good to be here, Kevin.
As always, good to be here, Kevin.
All right. So what do you guys have to report from the Mid-America Truck Show this year?
Well, as always, we were very busy. Still trying to get my voice back. It was a great show. It's kind of a reunion. I've been saying this for years. It's nice to see so many of the people. We see everyone every year there. And sometimes we see them in the shop. We talk to them on the phone, but it's always nice to see them in person. So it's nice to know there's so many wonderful owner-operators out there in this industry.
I agree. It you know, the show for me just seems to get busier and busier every year. Every year I say I wish I could just go look at the show, go see things. You know, I was trying, I had did a lot of seminars this time. I was trying to get around all the different booths and spend time in each booth. And, you know, it's to the point that that was 28 years at that show for me. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of seminars. So I got to the point where all of my travel, I tried to travel outside the building, and the weather wasn't all that great because trying to walk through the building, one, it was crowded in the aisles, but two, it takes me like 2 hours to move from one booth to another because I just keep stopping and talking to people. So I had a good show. I thought it was a great crowd this year. John, did you get a chance to go look at stuff, or were you pretty much in the booth the whole time?
We looked at stuff setup day. We walked around at the end of the day. We got done pretty early with our setup and got to have a look around then. And after that, I think I left the booth twice. It was Saturday before I ever even took a break for lunch. Didn't even step out for lunch. And I wandered over to Cummins at one point. There was an engineer that's friendly with one of our Dorothy test trucks that was supposed to be over there that I never got in touch with. And so I walked over there and back. And on my way back, I stuck my head and watched one of your seminars for about 10 minutes. I was a little fly on the wall in the back of the room there. You didn't know, don't know if you saw me or not, but I was walking by and saw you up on a stage. I'm like, well, I'll listen to this for a while. And that was it. That was the only time I left. Those were the two times I left the booth. So that was it. Aside from bathroom breaks here and there.
Yeah, it's a crazy show. You know, it's like I said, 28 years. I've been through many, many up and down cycles. Some year it's a very depressing, you know, 08 was pretty depressing at that show. There were a couple other years that stand out. But boy, the excitement and the optimism in trucking, you could really feel at the show this year.
Absolutely. Definitely had a sense of that. I was thoroughly amazed by that. Go on.
Go ahead.
So I was amazed by what I really most impressed with was the whole big PACCAR thing. That was huge. So that was pretty amazing, what they did there and gave away the millionth Pete. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah, that's quite a booth they have over there. That it's like a show in itself. It's so big.
Yep.
So, and I know most of the time you guys spend a lot of time there answering questions. People want you to troubleshoot their trucks or, you know, talking about the different products or the things. Anything that really stands out that you guys talk to somebody during the booth or during the show at the booth?
Go ahead, Bruce.
I'm going to say I'm getting a lot of people that want to go 75 miles an hour because of the higher speed limits, and they want fuel mileage. And it's really hard to explain to them. It's almost impossible to have fuel mileage at 75 miles an hour crossing Wyoming into a headwind. And so we talk about different things, and we talked a lot about gear ratios. It's just a huge difference between 65 and 75 miles per hour. And So that was one of the things I had a lot of. But
you know, Bruce, I've been hearing that too, and I think you're right. It's partly the, you know, the states keep raising the speed limits, the hours of service. I think is making people feel pressure, so they're trying to make up that time somewhere. Yeah, and you know, people will ask, well, what can I do to get fuel economy at that speed? Well, nothing changes as far as what you can do. I mean, physics are still physics, so it's still the engine tuned right, good airflow in and out, low rolling resistance, low mechanical resistance in the drive lines, all the things we've ever talked about. They will still improve fuel economy. But what people absolutely have to realize is you lose a tremendous amount of fuel economy at those speeds, no matter what you do. So, you know, the rule of thumb, if we start at 55, is whatever fuel economy you can achieve at 55, for every 1 mile per hour you go faster, you will lose 1/10 of a mile per gallon. And it's a pretty solid average. If you have a very non-aerodynamic truck, it'll be worse than that. If you have a really aerodynamic truck, it might be not quite that bad. But if we think about that, that means whatever fuel economy you can achieve at 55, you will achieve 2 full mile per gallon less at 75. And there's nothing we can do to change that.
You know, the manifolds and the turbos and the programming and the gearing, it all helps. But you won't see 7 and 8 miles to the gallon at that speed. And yes, you're right. It's the 14-hour rule along with the ELDs that's making everybody drive faster. I've been reading on the internet they want to blame a lot of truck accidents on blowing tires because tires aren't rated for over 75. And they need to look at the root cause of the problem. And the root cause is the 14-hour rule, as I see it, making guys not allowing people to take naps. And when you're tired, you can't take that 2 or 4 hour nap. Or whenever you hit rush hour traffic in the city, or when you're waiting 6 hours to get loaded, you can't log off. That all needs to be changed to get rid of some of these accidents. And to get the speed slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, they're really, one of the things I tell people, I talk a lot about rolling resistance, and the tires that have the lowest rolling resistance tend to be more expensive. They're different rubber compounds, they have more research and development put into them, different tire sidewall designs in order to, hold on. The problem is that rolling resistance is a little tricky. You know, we've always done all of our calculations between 55 and 65 when we talk about fuel economy. And the problem comes in with after 65, rolling resistance starts. When you compare a tire with high rolling resistance and a tire with low rolling resistance at 75 miles an hour, the difference gets a lot smaller. And what happens at that point is aerodynamics becomes such a huge factor that the rolling resistance difference gets minimized. So I've even gone so far to tell people, look, if you know you're going to drive 70 or 75 most of the time, you should focus your, you know, money that you're going to put towards fuel economy on performance items. A really well-tuned engine putting out a little more horsepower and torque can help produce efficient way, which will help fuel economy more at those high speeds and not maybe spend it on the tires. I'd like to say spend it on aerodynamics. There just aren't that many things you can do. You know, if you own the trailer, we have a lot of the smart truck stuff that really helps. There are a few things you can do to the tractor. But at those speeds, if that's the speed that you're going to be running up over 70 most of the time, aerodynamics and performance, you know, engine efficiency become really important. And rolling resistance, not quite so much. Let me get to a break. We're going to come right back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I'm going to get right back to the calls. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power here with me. We're going to head off to Oklahoma. Lyle, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning. How are you? Afternoon, actually.
Good. What's on your mind today?
Good afternoon.
I called in two or three weeks ago with a Cummins ISX 600 that I've been having trouble getting to start first, and then it started sucking air. Actually, I've had it to Pittsburgh Power back about 3-4 years ago, where we put the polished exhaust and the dampener and the balancer and the power box on it. I unplugged all that with all the problems. I had a Devco. I unplugged that as well, took it out of the system. And first we replaced fuel lines. It still continued to suck air. And I found a braided line that looks perfect, but he had not replaced that one. He replaced that, and I got rid of half of the air. And I continued to have trouble, so we replaced every check valve. This is over a period of the last 8 months. I've been going in and out of the shop trying to get this thing fixed. And we had the ECM tested. I think Pittsburgh Power tested it there, said there was nothing wrong with the ECM. It was replaced at 600,000. There's 1.4 million on the truck at the moment. The fuel mileage has been obviously all over the place with sucking air. It can't get good fuel mileage like that. So we replaced the check valves, and the last thing I did was I thought, well, we've done nearly everything we can do except replace the IFSM. So we replaced that whole thing, which is the fuel filter block that all the actuators hook to, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it started better, and it ran for about a week, and it started all over again. So at the present, is actually in the shop again for the same thing. He did find a crack in one of the check valves that goes right up into the head there that had been cracked for a long time. We thought that fixed it. It didn't. It did for about 4 days, and then this has come back again. So I'm about to tear my hair out on what to do with this truck, actually.
What year is it?
It is a September 99 manufactured engine.
What kind of chassis?
On a Volvo chassis.
Does that have the plastic fuel lines?
It has the plastic returns. All the plastic fuel lines, we have all replaced all those.
Hmm. Has there been a, Cummins has a procedure they call a bubble test that put some clear hoses on where the actuator solenoids go, the little adapter that goes on there, and you watch as you crank the engine around for a bubble. Has that been done by any chance?
It has, yes.
It has, and it passes it?
It didn't for a long time until we replaced the braided hose, and then it did. The other thing that you should probably know is that on this particular engine, they have a, I guess it's a left pump, that's right behind the fuel filter assembly that has a push button switch on it, so you can push and turn on and pump.
Prime it. Yep.
I don't guess it turns on when you turn the key on or something. I don't know. Now, recently, he ran a line directly from, this is like yesterday, ran a line directly from the tank up to where it hooks into the fuel filter, and it still was sucking air until he went up above that and hooked it in and bypassed that lift pump. And when he bypassed that lift pump, so far as we know, it ran good. But now whether that, I don't understand what that lift pump is supposed to do if it's not supposed to work while you've got your engine running.
Typically, the lift pump will kick on for 60 seconds on key on. I've never seen one with a push button before on an ISX.
And it is wired directly to the starter.
That's interesting.
Instead of through
I've never seen one
switch.
Like that.
How about if he puts the fast system on and lets it prime the system before it goes to start it?
Well, that's what he suggested, actually. Will that fix it?
It should.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, even if it's pulling a little bit of air on the backside of the fast, it'll dump it off. You know, it might be a Band-Aid, but it should solve the problem.
What about the standpipe in the tank?
Well, we thought about that, and the other day I ran it down to half a tank and turned as many cores as I could turn, and always on when I get down to a low RPM would suck air. But I filled the tank, and that didn't change anything the way it was acting, so we decided it's not that. And maybe it is, I don't know. But with it full, it shouldn't do it if it was sucking air as a result of
right.
your suction tube, right?
Right, right. Unless it was cracked all the way at the top.
Have you removed the standpipe and looked at it and looked where the pipe goes into the fitting?
We have not done that.
I think I'd give that a try.
Okay. I mean, it runs really good when it runs. But this air problem has been hanging on to me for a long time. The other thing we found the last time was a broken pin in one of the actuator plugs.
Oh.
Plugs into the actuator.
Right.
So yesterday I told him, I said, check all those plugs and make sure there's not any of those others that have either a broken or loose pin or something on them.
And that's not a prime issue then.
Have you replaced the injectors ever on this truck?
We have replaced one recently, but I have not replaced them all.
So some of the injectors are original from 99?
I can't answer that. I would guess that they are, but I don't know that.
I would really, I'd do that bubble test again, especially if they're original injectors. What that tests for is for compression leaking through the injector into the fuel rail. So you're actually creating air in the system when the engine's running, basically.
Yeah, Cummins call it the compression leak down test.
Compression leak down test. Make sure they did exactly that test. This really, really seems symptomatic of that.
Compression leak test?
Well, fuel system compression leak down test. Because they do compression leak down test, they'll test the pressure in the cylinders. But what this does is tests, it looks for compression leaking through the injector and into the fuel system. So it'll actually create air as the engine's running.
Got it. We're going to head off to North Carolina this time. Kenneth, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for everything you do for our industry. I sent you an email, a couple of PDFs, and I'm looking to pull a trigger on a 2015 Cascadia Evolution with 453,000 miles on it. It's set up with a DT12 transmission with 253 rears. I'd like to get your opinion on the dyno and the ECM.
I don't see, well, let me check and see if Bridget sent those over to me or not. John, you want to give them your opinion on the truck itself while I'm pulling these up? I like it. Pretty darn good specs for fuel
economy. I like it too, yeah. Yeah, that should work really well. We were talking about mileage and speed earlier. I don't know if anyone doesn't quite relate. While Kevin looks for your info, but I didn't get this in when we talked earlier. That new truck Henry Albert has got. He's been experimenting running 70 plus miles per hour, and he's still almost making 10 miles per gallon. So the aerodynamics on that truck are fantastic. That DT12 transmission works quite well. For an automated shift, it always seems to be in the right gear rather than the wrong gear. And there's a whole lot that goes into that. The thing actually uses GPS tracking and such to know where it is, if it's going uphill or downhill. It's a really, really smart piece. And you've got close to the right gear in there, too. I like the 253 gear as well. So that should be a pretty good truck.
What year did they put the GPS on those transmissions? Was that 2015?
I'm not sure when that happened. I think it was 15. I think it was when the DT12 came out, had these controls. The earlier ones that used the Eaton were nowhere near as good as the DT12. So the automated 10-speed, I think you'd rather stay away from. But the DT12 is a whole other story.
I looked probably at 67 pages of Freightliners in the truck paper. I found this thing across the country, and it was perfect set up for what I want, and I want to lease it to Landstar. They're telling me the filters, you just let the truck tell you when it needs to change them out. So when that happens, I plan on bringing it over to you guys and let y'all clean the system out.
That'd be terrific, Jim. That's the truck, you know, with what.
Hold on there, John. We're going to get to a break. John, I sent those documents over to you through a text, so you can take a look at them here while we're at the break. I'll try to look at them. Sometimes when I try to look at documents, I press the wrong buttons. That's never a good thing. But I'll try to get us through the break, and we'll come back and we'll take a look at these. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. Kevin Rutherford will be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me, and we are talking with Kenneth in North Carolina. John, did you get those documents?
I'm reading them right now, yep.
Good. I figured between the two of you over there, you could probably get through those quicker than I could.
I'm pretty happy with all of this. It appears that they just recently resealed the rear structure, which is an issue with those. That was a nice hunk of labor that's been taken care of already on this. So that's actually good that that's been done. So that's a good thing. I don't have a problem with that at all. The dyno horsepower looks right, but the torque is way high. So I don't know how they calculated that. But there's no way this truck has 2,700 pound-feet of torque. But yeah, I don't know if it's raw torque. Would raw torque be?
That's what I was just thinking.
Okay, what's the actual number on that? 405 on the horsepower to the wheels.
Yeah, like, what, 253 rear end?
Yeah.
That's still not right. That only puts it at 1,100.
Yeah, so they're showing 405 horsepower at 1,623 and 2,712 foot-pounds of torque at 1,594. Well, that's high, though, that torque.
Yeah,
at that RPM,
that'll be right.
That might be correct, yeah. Yeah. We'd have to pull it down.
They listed that truck at 505 with 1650
torque. Yeah. So that's the 505 horse version? That's a little low then to the wheels. But again, I'm not really trusting their numbers. 5:05 should be about
4:30.
Yeah, 4:30 or so.
4:35, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a touch low, but yeah. I wouldn't be afraid of this thing at all after looking at this. Is it a decent deal?
62,000, and it's loaded out with a full gauge package. They wanted 70. They wanted 70, and offered 62. It's a really, really nice, well maintained truck.
I wouldn't be afraid of this at all after reading this. And again, once you get it in here, and we could do a after treatment maintenance on it to go through and clean up some of the sensors and a few other things, and give it a looking over and pop it onto our dyno, see what it really does. 453,000. We got to put a damper on it now too. I bet no one's done that yet. So that's worthwhile. But I would not be afraid of this at all.
Sounds good.
Looks like a great truck.
Meeting you guys.
Right. Yeah, specs are great. Reports look great. Looks like going through 65 pages, you found a winner.
Well, that's, I tell you, I'm flying across the country to pick it up. It's a long way from North Carolina, I can tell you that. The salesman's been pretty awesome. And so I'm looking forward to getting it over to Landstar.
Terrific.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Good.
Thank you, guys, at Pittsburgh.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, John, I tell so many people this when they're looking for a truck. I teach a whole process on how you find a good used truck. It's got lots of steps. People look at it and go, why would I do all that? I just go down to the dealer and, you know, they shop for a truck the way they shop for a car. And I can buy a car at lunchtime and be done with the entire process in less than an hour. And a car here will be the same as a car in New Mexico or anywhere in the country. They're basically the same. Trucks, though, are wildly different. Different specs, different circumstances, different setups, lots of options. And people will say, but that's a long way away. Yeah, that's why there are airplanes. And the little bit of money you're going to spend to get there and get the right truck that you're going to keep for several hundred thousand miles or more is worth it. It's no different than when I tell them to, you know, get in their truck and point it towards Pittsburgh. The little bit of money you're going to spend to get there is well worth the results.
Absolutely. And enjoy the ride anyway. I mean, you're in the business, right? That's what you do.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Let's get to some more phone calls. We've got a bunch. We're off to Kansas. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. What I've got going on is my brother has a 2010 Pete with the Cummins ISX, and it had been hit by light. He's been in and out of the shop, and the shops don't seem to be able to fix it. It will just, the dash lights will go out and or the engine will just shut off, and it's hit and miss whatever is going on with it. There's no rhyme or reason. And I remember you guys, I believe, saying something about loaner ECMs, because I think his ECM is possibly the culprit. And he lives in the Kansas City area. And I wonder if that shop that Chad works out of would be a place that would do loaner ECMs, if you guys think that would be a solution.
Well, Ethan, we've got a couple of those ECMs in. That's a CM871, right?
I have one.
2010, okay.
Yeah, 2010 would be a CM871. I have one of them.
So, yeah, it would work out something where we held a credit card number or something and then send it off to you. We'd have to get your engine serial number. Ethan would have to load it up with the correct file for your engine and then send it off to you to try it. Especially if you're working out of Chad's, we could send it to him and you guys could put it on there.
Yeah, we normally take a deposit and then we'll return the deposit when the ECM is returned. The only issue with it being hit by lightning is it has strained most likely every one of the electronic devices on the truck. So you might fix one problem just to find another one pop up a little bit later. And this could continue for some time until you find where all the electronic devices that were damaged, because you just sent a massive high voltage through the entire truck's electrical system.
Okay. Well, I didn't really want to hear that, but...
I've seen cars get struck by lightning, and
it's it could be a long could be a long
it's never easy
process. Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate y'all's input.
No problem. Let us know if you need that. But like I said, we'd need to get some info from you, and okay. Go from there.
All right. So would if it is.
Oop, hold on one second, Tom. I was a little quick on
directly.
The. Right, go ahead.
Okay, so if we decide to go that route, would we want to call the shop in Kansas City or to call you guys to do the ECM part?
Probably both. You might want to make an appointment with those guys first and then give us a call and get us your info so we can get the ECM set up for you.
Yeah, I'll need your engine serial number, and then I'll have about, a dozen or two questions for you to get your ECM so that it keeps your truck just about the way it is. But that's what we call question and answer time. And like I said, it'll be about a dozen questions.
Okay. So other than the computers, because I expect that the thing's probably loaded with computers, would the lightning stress the wires also, and where wire looms would have to be replaced?
Possibly. Yeah, possibly.
It would all depend on how the lightning traveled through the truck to take its path to ground, and can't really know exactly how that's going to happen because it changes every time.
Okay. All right. Well, I do thank you guys for your help.
All right.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. We're going to head off to Iowa. Landon, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, I got a question on my 01 Detroit Series 60. I just had it rebuilt over New Year's. And since then, on a cold start, it seems like it's excessive smoke until it warms up. I was wondering if you could give me an idea.
Go ahead, John. You know what that problem is.
Since you rebuilt it, yeah. I just spent some time talking about this at the show and then again on the phone. It appears that with the low NOx pistons that are coming from Detroit now, if your truck was originally spec'd with a 15-to-1 piston, that's simply due to the lowered compression ratio with the low NOx settings. And really not a whole lot you could do about it other than change the pistons to the 16.5-to-1. We've spent a whole lot of money and effort and time, and we've actually rebuilt engines here with the 15-to-1s as they were spec'd, and had some unhappy customers that we had to take care of because they smoked so damn much. We've had people actually ask to leave truck stop parking lots because of the amount of smoke that was coming from their engine. And we tried everything under the sun. We tried different cams. We tried different injectors. We tried different tuning. And through everything and all that we could come up with after doing some research was the fact that the 15-to-1 piston does not yield anywhere near 15-to-1 in actuality. So the effective compression ratio of that piston, I believe, was in the low 14s. So that's not enough to fully burn diesel fuel when it's cold out. So that's really what you're up against.
Hold that thought. We're going to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. We've got more stuff right around the corner. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. This is the Power Hour. John, is there anything else you need to say on that last question?
Oh, that was about it. Is he still on? Are we still on with him?
I can bring him back on if we need to. We got a lot of calls, though.
Okay, let's move along then. But yeah,
hey,
it's a low compression issue.
Kevin, that goes back to when we talked about the BK versus the MKs, and don't build the MKs, build them into BKs. We wrote about it. We'll talk about it on the show. And if we don't continue to talk about this stuff, people forget about it. So that's what his problem is. He has an MK or even a PK, and he needs to build it back to a BK.
Got it. All right. We're off to Pennsylvania this time. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Another Series 60 question for you. My coworker and I, we received brand new Fitzgerald gliders. His VIN number is one off from mine. And over the past year or so, and my truck now has 114,000. I think his is somewhere around 130. Our fuel mileage is significantly different, as in 1 or 2 miles per gallon, depending on where we're at, as well as our power is different. We could be loaded grossing 60,000 or 50,000, and his truck will perform better than mine. I didn't know if you guys would have any ideas as to if there's any subtle differences between the two motors, whether it's a Fitzgerald rebuild or a Detroit rebuild. We both run the Silver Power Service fuel additive. Our trucks both seem to like that better. And I get a little bit better fuel mileage. Right now I'm averaging 5 miles a gallon with 1,100 miles on my tanks. So I don't know if you guys can be able to help me out with that at all.
Do you make 30 pounds of boost on a hard pull or 25?
25.
And what does the other truck make, 30 or 25?
25.
So they're both Fitzgerald rebuild engines, correct?
That I do not know. I was speaking with a local mechanic the other week, and he actually had said that was a possibility, that mine was a Fitzgerald rebuild, and his is a Detroit, or vice versa.
I don't think they're using Detroit. I think they're using, isn't it Clark? That would be the same thing. You know, it's all in the parameters in the ECM. We need to change. There's a glitch in there that we need to change so that you get your full 30-pound boost. We need to do that to both of those trucks. But let's make both ECMs identical. And if you're all the same and run the same, then you should get the same fuel mileage.
Okay, so it all sounds like it's a simple turbo adjustment.
No, not a turbo adjustment, ECM adjustment. There's no adjustment on the turbo.
Okay, I understand.
Okay, so both trucks we need to fix the glitch so you get your full 500 horsepower, and then let's compare both ECMs. If you both can come in at the same time, that would be perfect.
Okay. I might have to run that. Yep. Appreciate your help, guys. And that's definitely a good start for what I have before.
Okay.
All right. We are off to North Carolina. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hello. I just rebuilt my 1999 Volvo with 12.7 Detroit. Gabluing on the guts. And I threw some low-profile tires, 22.5 and 24.5. And I'm looking for a direction to go in to optimize the maximum power or performance I can get out of the truck. Let's see. I have a list. I have a fleet air filter. Performance muffler. I'm trying to figure out wise what to do first. I'm still in the break-in oil at this point, and I'm driving it like I would normally drive it, which is usually 60 miles an hour unless I get to a place where it doesn't permit me to do that, and I have to go up to 70.
How many miles on the break-in oil?
Let me see here. Here it comes. 2,600.
Good. So it's due for an oil change. So get your oil and filters changed to get the break-in oil out of there.
As soon as possible?
Yep, as soon as possible. Around 2,000 miles is all you want to put on your oil. And do you have a turbo boost gauge in the truck?
Yes, I do. I also have a KR gauge.
Okay.
I haven't been paying attention because I'm more concerned about driving the truck and listening to all the incidental noises that it may make.
You can still listen and look at a boost gauge or look at the scan gauge. Can you make 39 a boost on a pull?
I haven't had a pull where I had to do that yet. I've been running mostly flat land and light loads.
Okay. So before you rebuilt it, were you able to make 30 pounds of boost?
I don't think so.
All right. And where do you live?
In North Carolina.
Okay. You need to get a load and come to Pittsburgh, and let's get that truck on the dyno and tune that ECM and look at putting our performance manifold on and seeing which turbo you have. And that would be where you want to start. Let's set it up to 500 to the ground, which gives you 588 flywheel, and make sure that everything's okay on all your parameters on the ECM and get the right manifold on there if you don't have the imported and ceramic coated manifold. And if you still have the wastegated turbo, we got to get rid of that. That's gone. Have you replaced the torsional damper on the front of the crank?
I think when they did the rebuild, they did, but they probably used an OEM.
You think? It's not on your paperwork?
I don't have the paperwork in front of me, and the guy's two blocks away from where I'm at now.
Okay.
I was thinking about the I have about $8,000 that I want to spend incrementally trying to figure out where am I going to get the most bang for my buck.
You probably won't have to spend that much, but let's look and see what you have, and then let's program the ECM and get it on the dyno and make sure everything's right for you.
What kind of a window do you need for coming into Pittsburgh?
All right, now we're booked about a week and a half. But for that would be all engineering time mostly. So, Ethan, how far back are you right now?
Oh, we're about the same.
Yeah, he's busy too.
Okay.
So really, just give you a couple of days of heads up.
If you could give us a week or a week and a half's notice, that would be the best.
And I'm sure you guys carry the air tabs and the oil and fuel bypass as well as the...
We have the bypass oil filter. We do not have the air tabs in stock.
Hmm. So, 8 grand, we'll more than knock it out to where I want to get.
Oh, that you have more than enough. Yeah, we're not going to need that much.
I like that sound. I've had this truck since 2006, and it blew up on me in 2013, and it's taken me this long to get it back together. And I anticipate after next week being harassed by the DOT telling me that they know why I bought this truck, even though I bought it before CSA 2010. I'm just in love with the Volvo and with this kind of configuration. It'll be my last truck.
You sound pretty young to say that.
60 young?
Oh, no. No. You sounded to me like you were about 38.
Well, I get accused of acting like I'm 12, so I'll take that.
Cool.
I guess I get you off the website, right? Your number and everything?
Yeah, it's all on there.
Yep. looks like we're going to have to wrap this one up. We are all out of time. We're going to do it again real soon. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Power Hour. Thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power. We had Bruce and John and Ethan doing the heavy lifting. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, we have some more calls. We're going to go ahead and start a second show. We may not get through all four segments, but we're going to go ahead and answer the questions we do have. So here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. We've got the guys from Pittsburgh Power, Bruce, John, and Ethan with me. They'll be doing the heavy lifting. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, horsepower, torque, emissions, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. Bruce, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
John and Ethan, great to have you guys back here.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
As always, good to be here, Kevin.
All right. Before we get to the calls or see what you guys have, you know, is it my imagination or is troubleshooting kind of becoming a lost art?
Kevin, it's been a lost art.
It was definitely a lost art.
Days of the big cams. People used to call us and say, I'm pressurizing the radiator. We'd tell them how to check that. And they'd say, well, I already pulled the heads off, so I can't start it. I said, well, what are you looking for if you already pulled the heads off? You have no idea what you're going after. So for 41 years, we've had a lot of pride in how we diagnose problems. And we try to diagnose all problems before we tear the engine apart looking for them.
You know, I talk to people all the time, and obviously it's been a long time since I've really had my hands in a truck and an engine and turning wrenches, but I've been around, you know, mechanical things all my life, or now electronic things and the radio software and everything else we do. And I just, you know, I get excited about troubleshooting. You know, when you take that logical approach and you start laying things out and you eliminate things, and yet I see people just, I had an experience, that's why I brought this up. When I left the truck show on Saturday, I wanted, my goal was to get out to the mountain time zone before I had to start doing my, you know, midnight shows again on Monday night. So I drove pretty hard to get out to Colorado Springs, to where I'm at now. I'm going to head to Albuquerque when we get done here today. But I pulled in to KOA here in Colorado Springs that I spent almost an entire summer at about 6 or 7 years ago. I loved the place, but I got here late at night. I was tired when I got here. All I wanted to do was get set up, grab a nap because I had to do the show. So I plug in and I go in and I, you know, start checking all the power and making sure everything's right. And I realize I have two legs on the household, the AC power in this coach. And I realized only one leg had powered up, which doesn't work because then the chargers won't work and, you know, half the stuff in the coach isn't working. And I thought, geez, I wonder what that is. So there's three different ways to power the AC in here. I can run it off the inverters, I can run it off the generator, or I can run it off of shore power. So I thought, to troubleshoot, let me see what happens when I go to the inverter. So I went to the inverter, both legs are powered up. Go to the generator, both legs are powered up. Go back to the shore power, only one light's powered up. So I thought, I either have a really funky transfer switch thing happening somewhere, or maybe there's something wrong with their pole. So I didn't want to screw with it at night. I thought, I don't need it tonight. I'm going to bed. So I got up in the morning, went out and started troubleshooting the pole and figured out that's where it was. So I backed up to a spot right behind me, plugged in. I was fine. Went up, told the park. By the time I got back to my coach, they already had somebody working on the pole in the spot I was in. And I thought, you know, I'm really busy today, but I could probably save him a little time if I go explain what I've already figured out. So I walked over and I said, good morning. He immediately looks at me and says, just so you know, you're the only person out of 50 that had a problem with this pole. And I thought, wow, this guy's having a bad day already. So I said, oh, like, you mean because it worked yesterday, it must work today, right? And he said, what? And I said, never mind. I said, just so you know, that's the first pole out of 200 that my coach has ever had a problem with. So I said, let me tell you what I've already figured out. He said, I've got it figured out. He said, there must be something wrong with your coach. He said, look, he sticks his multimeter in the 50 amp plug and he says 122 volts, just like it should be. I said, okay, what else did you do? And he said, what else do I need to do? It works. And I said, really? I said, see that 30 amp plug right next to it? Stick your voltmeter in there and tell me how many volts are coming out. And he says, 122. I said, see that tiny little 15 amp plug, one that looks like a household plug right next to it? Stick your voltmeter in there and tell me how many volts are coming out. He says, 122. And I said, so I guess I could hook up to that 15 amp plug and power everything in my coach, right? And he said, well, of course not. And I said, what good does you telling me it's 122 volts do then? So he proceeded to tell me there was nothing wrong with the pole, but an hour later they were digging it out of the ground.
Hey, Kevin, you had made the statement that it's been a long time since you've had your hands inside a truck and in an engine. We could change that for you. Just turn that coach around and head it east and go in our parking lot, and we can put you to work in the shop and look at what you would gain, what you, the knowledge you'd have in a pump that you could talk about on the radio show.
I would have fun too. I have been working a lot on the coach this trip. So I've gotten greasy and my knuckles are all banged up and I've been working on the coach, but you know, it's not something I do every day. And when you do every day, there is knowledge there to be gained, but troubleshooting itself, I'm usually able to troubleshoot a truck better than most technicians that do work on them every day and have that knowledge, because they just don't seem to understand the proper way to troubleshoot things.
It is definitely a lost art. It's something that I've always had to work pretty hard at, largely because I couldn't afford to throw parts at anything ever. So I really had to find the for sure problem. But a lot of mechanics nowadays just want to throw parts on stuff, and they're almost too reliant on the computer. I mean, you need the computer. It's a great tool. But, you know, I had a fellow call this morning and had a back pressure check engine light coming. He goes, well, you know, where's that sensor? I'm going to change the sensor. I'm like, well, what if the back pressure is actually high? It might actually be working. So you need to check it somehow. You need to test it. You know, don't just throw a sensor at it. And it's just, it's interesting. It's a whole different mindset than we grew up with, you know, moving injectors around and things like that to make sure that actually is the injector that's bad when you have a dead cylinder, and that there's work involved in that. It's not easy.
Kevin, a lot of times when a person comes in and they want to buy a part, we ask them why. And they'll tell us what their truck's doing. And then we'll say, why do you want that part? Well, isn't that what's causing that? And usually the answer is no. It happened many times on the big cams. A guy's engine would be smoking. He'd come in and want to buy a fuel pump. And you ask him why. Well, I'm smoking. Are you smoking all the time? All the time. At an idle with a hot engine? And our answer was, did you ever think of setting the valves in the injectors first? because the fuel pump just supplies
yeah.
pressure. The injectors have to do the atomization. So it's much easier to change the fuel pump. Look how many people change a turbo today because something else is shown bad. Instead of smoke testing and pressurizing the entire intake system, not just the charger cooler. Turbochargers get blamed for a lot of problems. If you drive through a heavy rainstorm and you get your air filter wet, it will suck oil out of the compressor side of the turbo. People call up, I'm throwing oil out of the turbo. Which side? Compressor side. And I'll say, did you drive through a heavy rainstorm in this past week? Yes, I did. Change your air filter. Drive the truck for 100 miles and tell me if there's oil still coming out. And a lot of the times they'll call back. They'll say it's cleared up because the air filter was wet. That happens with a paper air filter. It doesn't happen with the fleet air. So we've been doing this for years.
Yeah, you know, and I think, John, what you said, and Bruce, you've taught me lots of those, you know, really cool little troubleshooting, you know, techniques over the years that have helped. And once you've got that mindset of, you know, you're going to find the problem without just throwing parts at it. But, John, I started racing motorcycles when I was really young, and what you said, I didn't have the money to just go buy parts. You know, and in fact, anything you could do to get it working again without spending money. And then I think spending a couple years in aviation where you don't throw parts at anything. You know, you diagnose every problem before it ever goes back up. You just don't throw in a sensor and say, let's take it for a ride and see if that works. I think that's why I've just always really focused on troubleshooting so much more. Let me get to a break. We will come right back. We're going to get to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and John and Ethan are here with me. You know, the thing is, we're, you know, fixing and troubleshooting helicopters, it was almost always the sensor. When something did go off, a warning light, you had to shut down immediately and land wherever you could. It was almost always a sensor. Very seldom did things actually break, but you were never allowed to just put a sensor in and see what happened. You had to go back and test whatever system, you know, was showing a problem and test it multiple times to verify that there really wasn't a problem. Then you could change the sensor and test everything again.
Absolutely. That's the way it needs to be. We were the race team I work for. There was a new car introduced to the series last year, so there were some gremlins and bugs and things. And early on, one of our first outings, we had a huge problem. The car would just shut off. And we changed the whole wiring harness. It was a very late night and went through the car front to rear and put it all together and still had the same problem. It was not getting a signal from the throttle switch. From the throttle position sensor, exactly like a truck. I mean, the systems are identical. It's fly-by-wire, uses a throttle sensor just like a big truck. And as it turned out, we run a pressure sensor on the cooling system so that the dash can alarm you if you have a hole in a radiator or something, or for some reason the pressure drops in the cooling system rapidly, and which is probably a good thing to have on a lot of stuff. I don't know why cars don't run those, but we sense the pressure in the cooling system. It's not necessary, but it's just an advisory, you know, thing for the driver. If he holds a radiator or something, he knows to shut the engine down. So after completely changing the throttle position sensor and the whole chassis loom, which is not an easy thing to change, the thing still doesn't work. And I went back to something I saw Ethan doing here and just starting unplugging sensors that are completely unrelated to the one that wasn't working. So as it turns out, there are about three sensors that are on a chain of supply voltage, and our coolant sensor happened to be shorted out dead and yanked all the voltage away from the throttle position sensor, which is where we thought the problem was. So the one sensor that it actually was this time, but we worked till 2 a.m. We had the engineers from Italy and engineers from England on the job, and I walked up and said, well, why don't we do this? Let's start unplugging things. And the British guy got out the wiring harness and said, okay, these three are on the same chain as the throttle position. I'm like, well, start unplugging stuff. And lo and behold, we unplugged the coolant temp sensor, and everything worked fine. And I think it's still unplugged, actually. I don't think we run it on that car. So, but that's the process, yeah.
But, yeah, good stuff. All right.
It's an audibility that I have. I walk up to problems like that and say, well, what about this? And they've been working on it for hours, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, that was it. How do you do that? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. Let's head off to Washington. Jacob, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I bought a Freightliner Columbia 2002 with a Series 60 and a 13-speed back in January, and I just had a couple questions about it. This is the first Series 60 I've ever had. My oil pressure while I'm driving down the road is about 50 PSI, and that's like way higher than the ISXs that I used to drive. Is that accurate, being that high?
Yeah, that's on the high end. That's about as high as it, you'll see it on the Detroit, but yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the ISX uses a different system than the Detroit do.
And then when it's idling, it's down to like 25 PSI. Should there be that much of
absolutely
a...
absolutely fine.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
That makes
that's
me happy.
Right.
And then a question about my
that's
transmission.
Good.
Okay, perfect. And then a question about my transmission. It's a 13-speed. I looked up the part numbers on the Eaton website, and the part numbers come up as a 9-speed with a direct as a direct drive. So I'm just curious, but does that mean that somebody has put the adapter in there to make it the 13-speed? And if so, would that make it running direct in 12th or in 11th?
Well, hold on a second. What's the gear ratio in this truck?
My rear end is 293s.
Is this possibly, have you looked at the history? Did this come from Swift?
It did.
Okay. I knew that. Yeah. Swift might be the only people on the planet that spec direct drive 9-speeds with 293 gears, but they did this. Swift has gone through history and periods in different parts of the country with fleets where they spec trucks at 57 miles an hour. The first truck I ever bought that taught me about fuel economy came off of Swift's fleet, and it was set at 57 miles an hour. That was max, but it got killer fuel economy. This truck will get really good fuel economy at 60 or less. You start driving any faster than that, and you're going to watch it drop off pretty quick with those gears. So this is a really good combination
that.
If you're willing to drive slow. Yeah, as long as you're willing to drive slow, it's a great setup.
Yeah, I've been setting it at 57, see what kind of fuel economy I've been getting, and I'm only getting 5.5, but I pull a 3-axle curtain van in Oregon and Washington. So I'm usually sitting about 88,000 pounds.
I would still expect better than that. So there's probably some troubleshooting we want to do with this thing. If you put it in 13th and you go 60, where's the tack?
It is right about 60. It's about 1250, 1300. I've been driving it in 12th at 57, and it's sitting right at 1450.
So that sounds like your direct gear, 12th does. This might be a weird conversion, but I think 12th is now your direct gear.
Okay. All right, so that's where I've been running it. So I should be getting better than 5.5, you think?
Yeah, even with that setup, I realize you've got some challenges there, but I would expect you at least at 6.5 and 7 or 7.5 with some tweaking and modifications wouldn't be out of the question.
Okay. So I just sent off my first oil sample. I haven't got it back yet. The truck only has 670,000 original miles on it. So it was a nice low mile truck whenever I bought it.
Yeah, sounds like you've got a nice little gem there. One of the first things I would do, especially in your operation, is I would put the Pittsburgh Power Tune there.
That was actually one of the first things I wanted to do to it. I just put an OPS on it because I changed the oil this weekend. And then my next step was going to be the Pittsburgh Power Tune. I found a guy here in Oregon that does the remote tuning.
Is it Bill?
How much
did you find?
What was that?
Are you going to see Bill? Bill Harlow?
I can't.
Humbug.
I don't
he calls
think,
his company.
No, it was a guy down out of I think Chemult or Chiloquin.
Oh, I forget who that is. Who was that? Yep. Yeah, and I know we've got a guy there too. Yep. So
okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, how much, he said I needed to talk to you guys, actually, to find out how much that runs for the Series 60. Do I need to call your office, or as far as the price for it?
The custom tune on that one is what I'm going to recommend, because I don't know. Do you know what the factory, the horsepower set at currently?
The tag on the engine says 430.
Okay, so it's either, it could be, you know, unless you look in the ECM, someone could have bumped it to a factory 500. But my favorite one is the custom tune, which does about, I always like to start guys off with a 12.7, about 500 to 5.25 at the rear wheels. It seems to be right where these engines get their best fuel efficiency.
Okay. That sounds awesome. So as soon as I get my first paycheck here, I'll be doing that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's where you're going to see your biggest improvement, especially with the fact that you're requiring a lot of performance. The three axle, the curtain side, it kills aerodynamics and rolling resistance on the trailer. You're out in a part of the country where you're doing a lot of climbing. That performance tune is going to make that may get you a full mile per gallon in your operation. As long as, you know, when we see that oil sample, we'll be able to tell a few things. Get the charger cooler tested, get the overhead set on it, and I think we'll get you up into 6.5 pretty quick. A couple other tweaks, we could probably get you to 7. I'm looking at the clock. Looks like I'm going to have to take us into a break, so I will do that, and we will come right back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. The website is letstruck.com. If you don't have the app yet to listen to our show, you should get it. It's free. It's easy.